Welcome back to The Trendline, making sense of what's new and next in politics. Here's Kristen Soltis Anderson.
I am joined now by Rich Tao. He is president of Engages, and he has been doing a series of focus groups talking to people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016, then voting for Joe Biden in 2020, trying to understand a little bit more about what these swing voters are thinking as we head into a potential rematch in 2024. Thank you so much, Rich, for joining. You talked to some of these swing voters in North Carolina. Tell me a little bit about what you covered in these groups.
So we spent a bunch of time talking about the 2024 election, the prospect of Trump running against Biden and where they fell between those two candidates. We spent time talking about the indictment handed down last week about Trump and the Mar-a-Lago documents. Talked about the debt ceiling. We talked about politics in North Carolina. So a wide variety of different topics.
Well, let's start off by talking Donald Trump. I mean, the big news over the last few weeks is the historic development that former President Donald Trump has been indicted on federal charges related to his failure to return documents of important national security to the National Archives, and the allegations that he was not forthcoming with the government in the process. So, Rich, let's take a quick listen to what your respondents thought just about the indictment in general.
I'm disgusted with it all. I'm disgusted because it just takes away from the governing of this country, and it's continuing to split the country, and it's just disgraceful.
It's embarrassing. I think that the news is obviously global, and it's a sore spot for our country.
Okay, so is it embarrassing to you personally as an American? Are you feeling that way?
Yeah. I mean, frankly, I am. I think it's a gross showing of a mockery of the most important position in our country.
I don't really feel bothered by it, to be honest with you. I mean, I've had charges before, but until you're proven guilty, then you're innocent.
I knew it was going to happen. So I guess I emotionally dealt with it months ago. Does that make sense?
That's fascinating. It's like on Succession, which is a show that I watch and I understand very few other people actually watch when you look at the ratings, but there was a character on that show who talked about pre-grieving for a relative who passed away. She was sort of like pre-grieving for this indictment. I mean, it sounds like it was a mix of pretty negative emotions, but were these negative emotions directed at Donald Trump for what he is alleged to have done? Or was it more just disgust at the situation itself or at the fact that this is even happening?
It was more directed at Trump. I spent some time probing on that because people would make statements like, well, I was disgusted. Well, what are you disgusted?
Or,
and they would tell me time and time again, it was Trump that they were frustrated with. They have had enough of him. So that was abundantly clear.
Yeah, this is, I think, one of the things that's a challenge for Republicans is that Donald Trump is not endearing himself to independents at all. And yet Republican voters are still pretty open to the idea that he could be their nominee, even if he is convicted on these federal charges. But I also think that one thing that we're going to see how this plays out is this idea that is Donald Trump being persecuted for being, you know, the chief rival to Joe Biden. Let's take a listen to what your respondents had to say about, you know, Trump's allegations that all of this is just politically motivated.
I don't think it's politically motivated to the point where you see some dictator getting his attorney general to go round up the person he's going to run against. But like he said, it's hard not to think anything's politically motivated when the current administration appoints the Justice Department and attorney general and everything. But I don't think this is outright politically motivated attack.
I feel like it began certainly as a political motivation, and it's grown into, you know, you know, some charges that are likely to possibly stick.
I'm in that bucket too. There's not much at all today that's not politically motivated. Right. And that's sad to me.
This is the thing that Donald Trump is always able to do to kind of hang on, is find some kind of kernel of something people go, yeah, well, he's probably right about that, but to like keep hanging in there. And this argument that, hey, none of this would be happening if I wasn't running for president against Joe Biden. I disagree with that. I think that even if he was not running for president, he got himself into this problem by not returning documents and not being forthcoming with the Justice Department about it. But it seems from your respondents that they are saying, yeah, he shouldn't have done it. Yeah, I don't like him. Yeah, I'm over this guy. But he's not wrong when he says this is politically motivated. Is that a fair read on what your respondents had to say?
So there was only one person who thought it was clearly politically motivated, like Biden was out to get him type of politically motivated. For about 7 of the others out of 11, it's plausible that there might be some political motivation to this because seemingly everything in America these days is politically motivated. And then we had a few people who said the underlying charges are serious. He did these things. It doesn't matter whether or not it's politically motivated because he did them.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting balance that we had to that I struck there, where I tried to understand that most people aren't walking around with the Trump level of paranoia that this is Biden trying to get him.
Yeah. So my question then is, you know, with all of these voters, is there any hope of any of them coming back to Trump?
Well, I would tell you that it's extremely unlikely that these people are going to come back to Trump. When I asked them straight up, you know, in a head-to-head match between Trump and Biden election, imagine the election is tomorrow. Who would you take? Only 2 out of the 11 would take Trump back. So, and they're doing that grudgingly. But interestingly, when I say, imagine there's a hypothetical matchup between Biden and a middle-aged white male Midwestern governor, non-controversial Republican, and that person is running against Biden. Who would you take? Well, instead of Biden winning 9-2, he loses 8-3. So basically, the only person that Biden could beat is Trump. If Republicans put forward just fill-in-the-blank silhouette, boring Midwestern white middle-aged guy who happens to be a moderate conservative, they're taking that person. They don't want Biden. The only thing is they don't want Trump more. So –
yeah. So Alexi McCammond at Axios, who wrote up their piece about your focus groups, put this out into a tweet that, you know, it was kind of remarkable that your respondents were pretty down on Joe Biden, and yet in the end, all still largely said they'd vote for him. And I noted that I had the same thing happen in the focus groups that I did for The New York Times. So I was looking at a slightly different demographic. So you were looking at people who voted for Trump in 16, then voted for Biden in 2020. I was looking for people who voted for Biden in 2020, but now report being disappointed in him. They disapprove of the job he's doing as president. And so for some of them, their disapproval was kind of coming from the left, right? He hasn't done enough. He hasn't been aggressive enough, but they still would, of course, vote for him over Donald Trump. But there were a lot of others in that group, in my focus group, who said, yeah, I think he's too old. I don't think he's capable of being president until 2028. I don't think that he's a strong leader. And yet, to a person, they all said, yeah, I'll probably still vote for him over Donald Trump. Let's take a listen to what your respondents had to say about Joe Biden's age, and then we'll talk about it.
I mean, maybe if he held more press conferences where it seemed like, you know, he was fully, you know, understanding of everything going on and not seemed like he was in a cloud.
I guess reports from his doctors, even though with HIPAA, if he can waive HIPAA and, you know, make more documentation of his mental health, his physical health.
Kathy, have you heard any reports from any of his doctors while he's been president about his mental and physical capabilities and his health status?
Only when he has his checkup that everything is fine.
Okay. And that's not satisfactory, knowing the doctors at Walter Reed are telling you that he's okay?
Well, I don't know that I trust everybody anyway, so just tell you what you want to hear.
He just needs to look more coherent. You know, sometimes he rambles and stumbles upon his words, and you know that's what imposes a lack of confidence.
So it sounds to me like there's, it's possible, but it's not going to be easy to alleviate these concerns with voters. Rich, what was your take on what they had to say?
So the answers you just heard were in response to my question, what could they do? What could Biden do to alleviate their concerns? And you could see that it was a very long row for him to hoe there. That is a problem for him because he can't make himself younger and more vibrant. And so their feeling is that even if they were told by a group of Republican doctors chosen by Trump that Biden was generally okay, and they were reassured, and they seemed to, you could remove political bias from the diagnosis of both his physical and mental condition, that still would not be reassuring to them. And it's not reassuring because what for them, it's the old behavioral science phenomenon of what you see is all there is. They see Biden stumbling both in his words and in over sandbags. And for them, he's not in great shape. So it's only because they detest Donald Trump for the most part that they're willing to choose somebody that they really are very, very concerned about. And there's not a lot that Biden could do to reassure them.
So this then raises the question of the vice president. Kamala Harris was not someone who in my focus groups I see a lot of affection for. Did your respondents talk about this at all as a factor?
It came up a little bit. In focus groups I did with the Washington Post back in May, I spent more time probing on this. And I was actually surprised that there wasn't more questioning of Harris's capabilities. They seemed to be generally okay with her. That was people across four different swing states. It wasn't just North Carolina. It was Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Georgia. So, you know, again, I think we need to have a little bit more quant work. That's your specialty, obviously, in understanding how people in this persuadable group look at Kamala Harris. It's not like she's inspiring a massive amount of confidence, but I'm not hearing a lot of, well, you know what, I can't vote for Biden again because she would become the president if something happened to him. I'm not getting that. And I thought I would hear more of it. And it's not coming up organically.
Well, the last thing I want to talk about is how these voters think about Biden's record, because there's obviously a lot of disdain and frustration and belief that he's perhaps not up to the task. But at the same time, his administration claims, hey, we've put more points on the board than you could possibly imagine for a Democratic president, right? Whether it's the Inflation Reduction Act and the money that they spent on doing things around climate or getting the debt ceiling deal done and not crashing the country's economy into the rocks, that the Biden administration would claim, hey, we've done a ton and we're frustrated that we're not getting credit for it. Let's take a listen to what your respondents had to say about who is responsible for or who should get credit for things like the debt ceiling being raised.
No, I felt because they were up against the wall, they had to do it or they'd hurt our credit rating. It's good that they had to work together. There's no other choice. Either side didn't get exactly what they wanted. So that's good bipartisan, but I don't give them much credit. I mean, that's their job.
I think if they were better at their job, it wouldn't come to this. Like, they knew it was coming. Why didn't they work together sooner to avoid this happening instead of just, you know, rushing to get it all? Okay, just throw this in there. Just throw that in there. How about just, you know, it's coming. Why not, you know, start sooner to come up with a resolution?
Had they done this, you know, sooner, when people didn't have to go into panic mode, I probably would have given them kudos for it, but they were desperate.
So it sounds like voters are not really giving Congress or Biden or anybody like a gold star for how, you know, on their paper for how they did in handling the debt ceiling. It's sort of like, hey, you didn't crash the economy. That's like the bare minimum of what we expect from you all. What was your reaction to their take on the debt ceiling debate?
So among the 11 respondents, they were kind of split evenly. We played the clips just now of the ones who are critical of Congress for waiting so long, taking so much time, barely getting it done. There are other people who did give them credit because they said it needed to get done and they did get it done. But it wasn't like a slam dunk where they're like, oh, we're so happy about this bipartisanship in Congress. We're so amazed that you did this thing. It was basically, yeah, you did it. Okay. And you could have done a lot better than you actually did execute it. Could have been done more on time. So that's one thing. I would say the issue with Biden and his achievements is consistently I hear people having no clue what he has done as president. And if the administration is aware of this, I would argue that it's on them to make sure that people do know about it. But I am constantly amazed by the number of respondents who, after 2.5 years of a Biden presidency, cannot name a single thing that he has achieved or that Biden would call an achievement. They can be critical of inflation, and they are the critical of other things like the pullout from Afghanistan. There are people who are much better at telling you what Biden did wrong if they know something than what Biden did right. But there's a lot of these swing voters who cannot name one single thing they've heard him achieve in 2.5 years. And that to me is absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Well, let's. I want to close by talking about those two people in your group who said they would take Trump back. Because on the one hand, you know, 9 out of the 11 didn't. And if that dynamic holds, the math is pretty challenging for Donald Trump. On the other hand, if you have even some of those voters defecting, I'm curious what the rationale is and to what extent that could grow, even in the face of all of the mayhem and the indictments and goodness knows what else. Like, what is the thought process of the two people who said, yep, I would take Donald Trump back?
It's very simple. People who fall into that category generally are extremely upset about the state of the current economy and have a sense that it was much better under Trump, and they liked Trump's management of the economy better than they like Biden's. So for them, it's a very dollars and cents calculation. They want economy pre-pandemic. They want it back, and they think Trump can deliver it.
Well, Rich, I'm so grateful that you came on the show today to talk a little bit about what you've been finding in your focus groups. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks so much, Kristen.
I've been talking to Rich Tao, president of Engages, all about his focus groups of swing voters in North Carolina.